Are we done already?
Do you want to keep going? We can go forever.
In a world where only the strong survive, there comes a time when the only way to settle the score is a one-on-one battle to the finish. Two entrepreneurs enter, but only one of them leaves. It's the Entrepreneur Showdown with Joe Cassandra and Dan Franks. Now, on to the showdown.
That's right. It is Entrepreneur Showdown time. My name is Dan Franks. Across the way, my partner in crime, Joe Cassandra. And today, we welcome on one of our biggest guests yet. That is the man, the myth, the legend, Pat Flynn. And find out why Pat Flynn flat out refused to end the interview in today's main event. Also today on the showdown, in round one, Joe and I are going to talk about Lady Gaga and why you, yes you, should take her advice on marketing. You don't want to miss that. And in round two today, Joe and I talk about Pat Flynn a little bit before we lead into the main event. We talk about Pat Flynn's latest income report, we talk about Pat Flynn's way of doing business, and we talk about his audience. What's wrong with some of those people? But first, make sure you check us out on iTunes, leave us a review, click the subscribe button, and do not miss another episode. And for all the show notes of today's episode and a whole lot more, head on over to www.entrepreneurshowdown.com. And now, let's get on to the showdown.
Round one.
We're looking at today Lady Gaga. That's right. The wild temptress meat dress lady, Lady Gaga. And we're looking at today actually her marketing, not her wardrobe, her marketing. We found an article on CNN actually that talks about how Lady Gaga can actually teach us about marketing. And this is actually a very interesting topic because you know that a lot of people, they say she goes out in these crazy outfits or does these crazy videos just to get attention or to be controversial. But the thing is, being controversial is actually a way of marketing because it gets people to talk about you. And I think that's, I guess, the bottom line to marketing, get people to talk about you. I don't think it's as much, I guess part of it, yes, is get people to buy a product. But at the same time, it's also about building a brand, building a following, and building, I guess, word of mouth spreading, for lack of better words.
I'll tell you what, our boy Marcus Sheridan and his buddy Jay Baer, they would not like this idea one bit. They are all about usefulness, and Jay's book, Utility, it's all about being useful. And the whole idea behind Lady Gaga is to create controversy, for things to go viral. She does crazy videos. She wears crazy outfit. She had a meat dress on one time I saw just trying to stir up PETA. So you got all the people doing PETA ads wearing, you know, nothing at all. Well, she's going to put on meat and try to put on meat. I mean, come on. But it's working. Controversy is working for her because her music is what it is, and it's probably good. But what's setting her apart is not her music. It's the aura that she's created around herself and this following she's created around herself that's really got people talking all the time about her.
Yeah,
she's put out two CDs in like, you know, going on 10 years. I mean, anyone else would be completely out of the spotlight putting out such little content. But her, she's continuing to stay, you know, on the forefront of everyone's mind.
Well, that's something I'm sure Derek Halpern would like because he's all about produce less content and market more instead of what the normal thing is. Everyone is all about producing as much.
I know. I can tell by his lack of podcasts.
Touche. Derek's got to come on and defend himself against that. But she's kind of following that same type of strategy where she just has a couple CDs, like you mentioned, but yet she's one of the top. She has some of the most largest Twitter following in the world, I guess, like behind Justin Bieber or something. But she's built this, like you said, aura about herself. But then is she really creating something of value? I mean, she's making money. Of course she is. But is she creating anything that people are actually, I don't know, are they just clinging to her because of her, like this intrigue with someone who's so out there? But yet you can't turn away from it. I guess that's what like TMZ, and then they thrive on sucking you into these stories which have no relevance to you or have no effect on you whatsoever, but you just can't turn away from it. Is she building some sort of value in that?
Well, I think she is, and I think that, sure, there's that element of people looking, you know, like the accident on the side of the road. They're looking, they're paying attention, even though they don't want to. But I think she really does have these fans that feel like, you know, they can relate to her for whatever crazy reason. But she's using this marketing strategy. She's not trying to appeal to everyone. And there's the old adage, if you try to appeal to everyone, you're going to appeal to no one. Whereas her, she knows who she is. She's pushing who she is. And she's following that, whatever that business plan is that she's got in place. And sure, some people hate it, but this, you know, the Seth Godin tribe theory, this tribe that she's building for herself just loves her. And she's got this, you know, online community that she's created, almost like her own little Facebook or her own little, you know, LinkedIn social group. And the people that are there are, you know, they're the ones buying her discs. They're the ones buying everything. They're completely bought in. So she's kind of saying, you know, who cares about all these other people that aren't consuming my product or don't like what I'm doing. I am catering to this group, this specific group, and for those people, you know, I'm it.
Should people then be building this us against them mentality that we're this little clique, or in her case it's a big clique, against all these, I guess, everyone else who just likes to laugh at her and make fun of what she does. Should people be then going after that?
Well, I think it certainly is a branding strategy. I mean, when Apple was really making their big push and they did the Mac versus the PC, I mean, it's kind of that same thing. You know, the masses were using the PC at the time, and they still are, you know, numbers-wise, but they really did build that us versus them and put it, you know, visualization on the commercials. So I think that it's certainly proven to be successful before. So this is just a different use for it. And I don't think it's a bad thing. It's not for everybody, certainly, but I think it can be used very smartly.
Well, let's bring this down to a smaller level. That's not 30 plus million Twitter followers. If it's someone just starting out, should they be trying to create some controversy, or should they be trying to do something that makes them stick out, do something crazy, or like, should we be doing something that, I don't even know, what would be crazy that we would have to do?
On a podcast, it would be hard. I mean, I guess we could, you know, do some kind of bait and switch and get some of these big names on and just, I don't know, do something crazy to them. And that would probably get downloads because, you know, it's almost like when Andrew Warner had Pat Flynn on and there was quite a bit of awkwardness. People went and listened to that because, you know, hey, Pat Flynn got called out. Pat Flynn this, Pat Flynn that. And when you hear it, it's more just Pat getting caught off guard. It's not like he was getting called out and Andrew wasn't trying to throw him under the bus. But that kind of thing was controversial. So I think if you were actually, you know, if we were trying to do something like that, certainly we don't have the chops that Andrew Warner has, so we couldn't get away with it.
Not yet.
But I think it would take something, I think it would take something like that, which is just not a smart business move. So like I said, this kind of thing isn't for everybody, but there's certainly places for it in some, you know, some niches.
Yeah, it's, I don't know, it's, because I've never tried anything like that where I try to be controversial or I try to, I don't know, I guess isolate some people away from me because you do something wild and crazy. I think it's a good way to build up talk and, like we talked about with Marcus, since we already mentioned him, like people putting iPhones in blenders, like that generated a lot of talk, but what kind of value can you bring out of that? And I guess in her case, she's been able to harness that because then she has created like a little social network out of that. And if you're able to figure out, hey, let's try and make a viral video or something like that, like the Dollar Shave Club people, where they made that great video and then they were able to harness all that attention into getting subscribers to their Razor subscription. If you're able to do that, I guess I think you should go after that. It's going back to what we talked about again with Marcus, that kind of wow versus useful thing. And in her case, it's a big wow, but then she's able to harness that and make this like useful community where people are supporting each other because they're all different and nutty. And I don't know what goes on in there, but
yeah, and it comes down to, this is only going to work if your product is good. If you're delivering the goods, you know, Lady Gaga, she's doing all this crazy crap. But at the end of the day, when the people who listen to her music, they like the music too. She's not just doing crazy crap and then has this bad music. She has good music for those people to back it up. So same thing. If you have a brand that doesn't, you know, it's a junk brand. It's a rubbish brand. And you do something controversial, it's not going to work for your marketing. It'll work for going viral, but, you know, crap is still crap and people realize that. So, you know, it's only should be part of your marketing strategy if you have something to back it up.
Well, I guess, in her case, if we go back to like what we talked about, she's only released a couple CDs. Maybe it's not for her about, and not for her fans either, about the music she creates. Maybe it's about what she stands for, and maybe that's what they're attracted to, not as much what product she's giving out and that they can buy. But she goes beyond that, and she's not, as we've seen, she's not trying to sell as many CDs as possible, or else she'd be releasing a lot more of them. She's trying to build, I guess, more a following for her cause. And right now, I guess her cause is like people who are different or odd or whatever. She kind of attracts those kind. And I think that's what people are attracted to, not as much as what she's created, but I guess like the brand that she wanted to create, she was able to, I guess, get that message over her music. Because that's what you hear nowadays more, is you hear her talking about her fans and people she's helped, not as much the music on
not her fans, her little monsters,
whatever you want to call those, whatever you want to call them. But and she even, maybe that's even part of it. She's given them a name that they can, that gives them a title that they're automatically, they've created that I'm different than the other people because I'm a little monster. I think that was a smart branding move by her. So for people who are just starting out, it's an interesting strategy to think about. Should there be some sort of controversy, or should you be trying to get some sort of viral type thing going? But as you've seen with her, and as we talked about, she's actually created it behind a message. And if you can find that unique message, I think you'll probably have something that's going to help you stand out like she has. But we're not going to waste any time. We're going to get right to round two.
Round two.
We're looking at in round two, Pat Flynn's July 2013 monthly income report. As of this recording, it's his most recent, and it's also his highest that he's done. And we're actually bringing on Pat. We'll have him on for an interview in just a little bit, so we're going to get his take on his largest month, how he's been able to expand on that, because usually his monthly income is pretty similar. And then suddenly this month in July, he just jumped up a bunch. And he goes through, it's a 5,000 word post, so we're not going to touch on all the spots, but he breaks down all the revenue he gets, and a lot of it he gets from Bluehost, which I think is really interesting that we'll get to talk with him about. But one thing I've noticed that at the very top when I was reading through it is, he talks about his new product that he has coming out called Breakthrough Blogging, and he links it because he had another post about it, and we'll probably talk about that post as well. And he goes through how he just built this product on blogging, and then in the comments suddenly people are starting to attack him for like being a sellout and starting to just pitch stuff all the time. And I was really interested because I know I've seen Pat get attacked before, but this was like a whole new thing. Like the whole post wasn't even about the course. It was about people attacking and people defending and everything like that. Did you get to look at that, Dan?
Yeah. And I guess I view this as almost like the darker side of this space, as far as, you know, entrepreneurial coaching like Pat does, or teaching or discussions like this. I mean, look, Pat's been giving out free content on his blog, free content on his podcast for years, and he's, of course, been monetizing through affiliate marketing and things like that, and been very successful at that for a lot of that time. But those are things that I guess are kind of optional, and they're just kind of there floating to the side and sometimes strategically inserted in his post. Nothing that's been pushed too hardcore. And this is kind of his first venture into putting his name and branding something that he's going to charge a significant amount of money for. And all of a sudden, yeah, these people that have been enjoying all this free crap from him for so long are just turning on him. And it's ridiculous because he hasn't kind of pulled back on any of his other content he's been providing for free. Yet all of a sudden these people, they're not happy with that free content anymore, but they're mad as hell that he's charging for something. And I, like I said, I think it's kind of the dark side. Well, I mean, Pat, he seems like such a nice guy. Why are you going to turn on him?
Well, but, well, usually, like I said, he usually makes about like 60 grand a month, but then suddenly he's making 100+ thousand a month in income.
Well, is this is what he's teaching. Like, he is teaching people how to make money, and everyone's happy to learn from him how to make money. But, oh, by the way, he's going to try to make money himself, and then they're getting pissed.
Well, because most of the time he's just made it off affiliate sales, which is his passive stream. But now he's starting to build all these things, and people are so used to just clicking on his affiliate links. But now that he's building stuff, they're saying, oh, he's going to get away from just giving away free content, and now he's going to start putting it behind a paywall. Which is a whole new, I guess, a whole new business plan that he kind of just, maybe he kind of just sprung on it because he wrote his one book and he sold that, and now he has this new course, and then on top of that, he already has all his affiliate stuff. So I guess all these pitches that he's starting to have with his book and his course and his Only 72 stuff, like, people are starting to think that he's starting to go down a different business plan path.
So let's dig into why these people are getting mad about this, because Pat's not the first person I've seen this something like this happen to. So let's dig into why these people who for so long have been fine with his content, but then they're mad when he starts to turn it over. Are they? Is it a frustration thing? Like, we're not, we might be losing some of this free stuff that Pat's been giving us, or is there something else in play?
I think it's more, for the past couple of years, he's provided all this free content and people have gotten used to it, all this valuable stuff, and they always felt that he was always in the background with how like how he pushed stuff. He always just had the affiliate links and said, hey, here's in a link if you want to help me out, click that. And so no one felt really, I guess, pitched by him. But then suddenly he's building these new products which will probably make him more money in the long run. And now that since he has to actually pitch them, because it's actually something he has to sell, they feel that he's, since he hasn't done this from the beginning for the past couple of years, that it's suddenly, I guess he's trying to change the way he does his business. And if he does just start building products, then yeah, I'm sure his content side will suffer, and that's where people are going to get pissed.
Well, look, you and I, we're not pushing anything right now, so if all of his audience would like to find some other way to listen to podcasts on a weekly basis without hearing about any kind of product, feel free for the thousands and thousands of them to come on our way. But, you know, I'm saying that tongue in cheek. If anything else, this is how I look at Pat's stuff. I'm not buying his products, but I'm looking at what he's doing as an example. You know, I consume his content just like everyone else who's reading these blog posts and listening to these podcasts. And even though I'm not going to buy the products, I'm not pissed off that he's putting them in there. I'm looking at, hey, this is how Pat's doing things. And then a month later, I can look at the income report and say, holy crap, that worked really well. There's an idea for how I might do it later on. I mean, it's like people are looking for something to complain about. And I guess that's life.
Yeah, well, if you get up to his rank where he is making six figures, of course there are going to be people that are complaining. And then there's the, hey, I want to get everything for free, like getting a handout. And especially people are always just on this content treadmill where they think like the next their magic pill is just around the corner, so they just want to keep consuming. And when they suddenly hit that paywall barrier where they can't consume for free, then they start getting ticked. And I don't know, I think he's starting to pivot to something new. He's starting to build products because he's always kind of based on affiliate marketing, and now he's writing books. He's building another blogging program, which there's millions out there. Which I don't know why people keep building them. I guess people keep buying them. I don't know what the big thing is because there's just so many of those. But I guess especially from him, maybe he saw, hey, I'm a big blogger. I'm going to make a lot of money just even if I just put together a blogging course, which I'm sure, and I'm not going to, I haven't done the course, but I'm sure a lot of it is free on his blog. And I don't know, maybe it was an opportunity that he saw he can make money really quick, because his breakthrough blogging, just preliminary sale, as you can see in the post, he made 50 grand. 50 grand off of that.
And is that just in that 72 hours, right?
That's what it sounds like, yeah. So, I mean, I don't know. Maybe he's starting to, especially with this preliminary sale, getting 50 grand, maybe he's starting to pivot to something else, and that's something we're going to have to ask him.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to hear Pat's take on this because you kind of, there's this balance. You have to continue to produce content that will not only keep your audience, but also grow it and foster those relationships that you've created with the audience members already. You don't want to lose that. But at the same time, if obviously Pat feels like there's money to be made that he hadn't been making in the past, so he's starting to do that. And there's that balance. Like, does he maybe see this negative reaction he's getting and pull back a little bit? Or does he say F it and go, you know, push forward more? You know, it's going to be interesting to see what he thinks about this and what his reaction is going to be.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, he's always seems like a really laid back guy, really nice. I've never heard him get upset or anything like that. So maybe we can crack open a little frustration or something in the when we bring him on.
So. We weren't able to ruffle John Dumas' feather, so we get a second chance with Pat Flynn here. So let's see what we can do with the nice guys.
Yeah, so I know plenty of people want to get right to it, so we're going to get right to Pat Flynn in the main event.
It's time for the main event.
We're here in the main event with our man, Pat Flynn. Pat Flynn is one of the names that comes out most when you hear success online. Heck, when you hear success, you think of Pat. He's the man behind the wildly popular Smart Passive Income site and one of the top podcasts around. He's the best-selling author of Let Go, and his new course, Breakthrough Blogging, sold over $50,000 worth of the course in just a couple days. Yeah, Pat's no sleazy dude. He's actually the nicest guy out there. You don't need to be sleazy to succeed. Just look at Pat. Pat, we're mega excited to have you. How you doing?
I'm doing awesome, even better now after that amazing intro. Thank you for that.
Just waiting for Joe to give his like Beatles scream for you, Pat.
Yeah, I followed Pat for a while. So actually, when I was at, we just moved from North Carolina, but I was looking for just something else because I just didn't like what I was doing. I was looking for, I guess, like an outlet to like get my creativity and stuff out there. And Pat was one of the very top that got me into it. So thanks for that.
Oh, that's awesome. You're welcome. Thank you for telling me. I love hearing things like that. It just motivates me like crazy.
So we talked about in round two, we talked about your new income report. You broke six figures. Congratulations. It's a big deal.
Yeah. And, crazy.
And it was with a new course that you had out called Breakthrough Blogging. And we talked about you got a little bit of flack for that. And Ed, we're kind of... I don't know. We're kind of mixed on it because usually you get a lot of your money from affiliate sales, but now you're suddenly starting to build products. Where did this sudden urge to start building after all these years come from?
Well, it's interesting. Ever since I, you know, maybe a year and a half to 2 years into blogging, I'm now in 5 years into it. But on the Smart Passive Income blog, around the 2 year mark, I started getting a lot of people asking me to develop some sort of product that can help people and, you know, how to start a blog and do everything that I was doing. And, you know, they wanted to learn from me. And I would always just forward people to other courses and things that I've used in the past or I'm very familiar with, things that are run by people that I trust that I know would take care of them because I had other things to do. And, you know, I trusted that they would take good care of them and they always did, you know, but recently, you know, if you go into my income reports, you'll see that a majority of my income, you know, prior to July of 2013, a majority of it, from SPI was coming from affiliate commissions, meaning I was making money from promoting other people's stuff or other companies' stuff. And of course, it's always stuff that I am familiar with and I've used myself and I am happy and more than confident in putting my name next to. But it's a little scary too, because, you know, at any moment in time, one, you know, those companies can end the affiliate relationship I have with them, or they could be bought out, or they could die off, and as a result, my income would be affected, and that's a really scary thing. And I you know, it's funny because I always teach people, you know, the best way to earn an income and create a long term business is to create your own products. Affiliate marketing is great. It's a great way to earn money, especially if it's products that can actually help your audience. It can actually increase your authority and increase the strength of the relationship you have with your audience. But there's nothing better than creating your own products, not just for profit margins, but because you are better able to serve your audience that way. And I almost felt like a hypocrite giving that advice and not having a product of my own. And already in the 2 months that this product has been live, I've noticed the effect that I've had on the people that are in this course. It's amazing. And to be able to follow them and help them along the way is great. And I realized that what I was doing before was I was sending people to other products and companies and people that I trusted, but then I wouldn't hear back from them, or I wouldn't get updated, or I wouldn't be able to take care of them like I feel like I could do better because, you know, they're into my stuff. And so from a business person standpoint, from a business standpoint, it is smart of me to create a business with my own products because I have more control. But as someone who knows that the best thing you could do to build a business is to build things that can serve your audience, I had to build this product too. So it just made complete sense, and I'm very happy with the decision. I got a few comments from people who were like, Pat, I've always gotten stuff for free. Like, why are you charging stuff now? Or, Pat, you make 50 grand a month. Why the heck are you trying to squeeze more money out of me? I'm not and that's just the initial reaction from these people. And I totally get where they're coming from. I understand where they're coming from. But nothing was ever pushy. Nothing was very aggressive. This was just another thing in addition to what I was doing, not something I was taking away from them. And, you know, you don't need to buy this, but some people want that extra level of help that's going to require a little bit more of my time, and time is money. And so that's where this course came from. And it allows me to better provide to my audience, to a larger number of my audience, as opposed to just dealing with people one-on-one in consultation or coaching format. So that's where the idea and the sort of motivation behind Breakthrough Blogging came from.
So if someone came to you and said, hey, I want to start a site that makes money, would you start them off on the affiliate course that you had? Because you were very successful, as you mentioned, with that. Or would you say, no, go right to start building something right away?
It's not about the method of generating an income. It's about the method of being able to serve your audience. So before anything, I think it would be, you know, you got to pick a target audience and find out what their pains are and discover what it is that they actually need. If that is something that you can create on your own, that you feel you can do better than anything else that's out there, then you have to do it on your own. If you feel that that's something, you know, there's solutions out there that you can't create on your own, then by golly, you might as well just share those things that are going to help your audience. And if some of those things actually have an affiliate program, which many of them do, then everybody's a winner, you know?
Now, Pat, one thing you talked about a little earlier, and Joe and I spent a good deal of time in the round two portion of the show on, is that you did have some negative detractors. And to me, I was just, it really surprises me, or maybe it shouldn't be in the internet, that these people have been reading your information and been super happy to take all this stuff from free from you for so long. And then when you, the first time you put something out there and maybe push it a little more than you pushed anything else, then all of a sudden these people, they kind of throw their hands up and get really irritated. And even furthermore, this product you're pushing is doing the things you were teaching for so long. So it almost seems strange that you waited this long, but what was your reaction when these people, when you had this, you know, some of these negative reactions, and how do you handle the criticism? Do you respond to all of them? Do you ignore all of them? Do you, you know, pick and choose?
Sure. I mean, my initial reaction was, here it comes, because I knew it was coming. And so I just knew it was coming, and I spoke with other people who have created membership sites and products before, and I just talked to them. Well, what can I expect from doing this? And all, you know, these are people in my mastermind groups and people I speak with each week, and they all were like, you know what? There's going to be a portion of your audience, a very small portion, because you've done a great job of building trust and authority with your audience, but there's going to be a small portion of outspoken people who are going to share their voice because you're giving them the ability to do that on comments, and they're going to speak up and tell you exactly how they feel, and a lot of people aren't going to be happy about this. And I was like, you know what? That's okay, because what I've learned ever since I started is you can't please everybody. And as long as the motivation behind what you're doing is for the right reasons, you know, whatever you do, you're not going to be able to please everybody. I mean, I've done site redesigns before, and I get people saying negative comments. I've written blog posts, and people send emails like, that was a ridiculous blog post. Like, why did you do that? Like, there's going to be people who always feel like you should have done something differently. But what gets me you know, why that's okay with me. And, you know, if you were talking to me 4 or 5 years ago, I would be depressed at this point. I couldn't take negative criticism at all. And I'm not talking about the trolls and the haters. And luckily, I mean, there weren't any on this in this particular case. There weren't any haters. There were people who were respectful with their comments. But when it comes to haters and trolls, which can come in every once in a while, and I've had a few of them on my site, those don't bother me because I know that those people have, you know, they have problems. They have other issues that they're dealing with, and they're just dealing with it by hating on my blog or hating on me or what I'm doing. And that's fine. I mean, they have other issues to take care of. And if they're being disrespectful, which trolls usually are, I'll just blacklist them from my site and they can't access it anymore. It's my site. I could do what I want. But if people are completely respectful, and they usually are, and if you go to that Breakthrough Blogging launch post, everybody who left comments, negative or positive, they were completely respectful, and they were just sharing and voicing their opinion. And that's something you have to remember, that they're sharing their voice and their opinion, and they're a part of your audience. So you have to listen to them. But the trick is listening to them and understanding, you know, what to do, you know, how to react or how to adjust or pivot if you need to, versus how to not, you know, and also not letting them get under your skin. And I think that's something I've just learned over time, was to, you know, really see the sort of constructive criticism as, you know, really being constructive. They're just trying to help. They are a part of the audience. They most likely are representing a larger portion of the audience who is silent. So it's important to listen, but it's important to not let them get in your way either. I mean, there's been instances where I've received constructive criticism, and it was actually extremely helpful, and I made changes as a result. And there are other times, like this time, where I was like, you know what, that's your opinion, but I know what I'm doing is the right thing, and if it doesn't please you, I'm sorry. This is the direction I need to go, and of course, I had to explain why. I mean, it'd be really easy just to say, no, dude, you're wrong, like, you know, and not say anything else.
You're an idiot.
Yeah.
I mean, and then you just drop the mic and point at the scoreboard and walk away.
Yes, in slow-mo. Yeah, totally. I mean, I was very lucky. You know, I am very lucky to have an amazing community at SPI who, when these negative comments came out, I mean, before I even saw them, 5 to 12 people had already responded for me in my defense, which is incredible. So, you know, I've just learned to grow a thick skin and see the respectful criticisms as potentially constructive. And, you know, as long as I know what I'm doing and why I'm doing what I do, then I have nothing to worry about. It's the moment when you get those negative criticisms and then you begin to question why you did it in the first place. That's when you have to worry.
Yeah, you had Derek Halpern even come over, and he was going to bat for you, so that was really good.
Yeah, and that guy knows how to argue way better than me.
So he comes out of the blind spot with the cross knockout blow and just shuts him down.
Yeah, exactly. Like, he's not even in the frame until, like, the last second.
Fist first.
Do you have there's some part of you that must be saying, like, oh, come on, I've been giving you guys free crap for the past 5 years. I mean, what else do you want from me? I mean, you have to have that feeling somewhere.
Yeah, I mean, it's there. And, you know, everybody's different, though. You know, and I can't control how other people feel. I can only control what I give to them, and they can, you know, make judgment calls on their own. And, again, you got to realize, and I had to realize this, and I've gotten a lot of advice on this over the past, for the number of people that leave you negative criticisms like this, you know, there are so many other people that deserve your time and energy and attention. And so that's why I was able to quickly move forward. And, you know, now I'm in my course and I'm interacting with them. And I mean, I could easily keep going on and on in the comment section and talking to people, trying to convince them otherwise of whatever it is that they're thinking. But I got more important things to take care of, and people actually who are thankful that I've done this and who, you know, I should be paying attention to.
So one thing I wanted to ask, and Joe mentioned this in our discussion earlier, was that it's not the first blogging coaching product that's been out there. And it's, in fact, there's quite a few of them. What made you want to do something that, and I'm sure there's quite a few differences, but from the outside, what made you want to do something that was just another blogging course versus just doing something completely different?
Well, the thing is, I mean, it's a blogging course, but it's not just another blogging course. And I think one thing that I do really well is sort of see what's out there and give something different to the market or add another solution or something that is, you know, not necessarily better, but just something that, you know, I'm good at finding holes and filling them. And it was a big hole in the blogging sort of market where, you know, there's all these amazing products out there that I've pointed people to in the past that are about how to start a blog, how to get it up and running, how to launch it, and things like that. There are a lot of great paid tutorials and courses and memberships. There are a lot of free tutorials and resources and things like that. And some of those free resources are my own. But what was missing, I found, and when I talked to a lot of people who were blogging, you know, one of the most common pains I saw was people who were having a hard time keeping going with their blog. And there was nothing out there that was truly dedicated to helping people stick with their blog. And so I created this course to help people break through the challenges that we're always going to face, no matter if you're a beginning blogger and you're just starting out and you have these technical barriers and, you know, barriers of fear of doing, you know, should I really be doing this, or the mental sort of game you have with yourself that you're putting work into this and you're not seeing results right away and being patient, versus people who are more advanced and who may come across things that try to stop them along the way, like what we talked about earlier, haters and people who are trying to, you know, hold you back and things like that. I talk about all that stuff. So it's not really, you know, I'm not trying to pitch this product here. It's not even open right now. But there was definitely a hole that in this space that I believe that this product fills. And what I love about the way I did this, and I haven't really talked about this yet, was I launched, you know, sort of lean. You know, I put a lot of value into it, and a lot of people have told me already, you know, this is worth way more than what they paid for, which is a goal, and it should always be the goal, no matter what. But I launched pretty lean, meaning there were features that I wanted to add and things that I knew could help people, or could possibly help people. That's the key word, possibly help people. But I didn't put in there. And the reason is because I wanted to get a group of people in there and focus on them and what they needed. There's a group of about 300 to 350 members in there right now. And I'm working really closely with them to discover what is it exactly that's working for you in here right now. What else would you like to see? What features would you like to be added? What videos are missing? What would you, you know, things like that, so that I can just continually add stuff. Each month I've been adding, you know, 10 new videos, and new features are coming out every week to help people break through these challenges in their blogging career. And, you know, so far they're loving it. I mean, they're feeling like they're getting special attention because I'm working closely with them. And what this is going to do from a marketing standpoint is when I reopen this, it's going to be way better than what it was. So either I could charge more, or people are going to find more value from it, or both at the same time. And it's just going to be much better than what it was. And everybody wins when you do it that way. And it's very inspired by Eric Ries and the sort of lean startup model.
So you're adding to this course that, like, even if they bought it at this lower price, and you'll probably, like you said, increase the price, you're adding all this stuff to it, and they don't have to pay anything else. They're just going to get more and more videos and such. Is that what you said? Is that what you meant?
Correct. The people that are in there now are sort of the grandfathered charter members. You know, these are the people that are most important to me right now, and are going to always be important because they were helping to get this started and are helping to shape it in the way that is perfect for not only them, but everybody else who's coming in the future. Like, we didn't even launch with a forum. And so we asked, you know, I asked the audience, or the people in there, like, what would you feel you would benefit from the most? Just having comments in each of the videos where you could talk, or having a forum, or all these other, you know, means, you know, a Facebook group or things like that. Majority, I mean, 99% of the people in there were like, we need a forum. So we built one for them. And you know what? They feel incredibly special, and that's at no additional cost to them. But we know it's going to help everybody who comes in the future, because it's exactly what they need. Because a small segment of our target audience told us that.
So is this new product, is this like a pivot for you that you're going to start building more products and focus, like you said, because affiliates, they could come and go as they please. Are you pivoting now to starting to make more products? Because you wrote your book as well, which is another product as well. Is this a new, I guess, phase for you?
You know, I feel like I'm always going through new phases. I think that's what an entrepreneur does. And so this is just another example of another phase, something that I'm experimenting with, although this is something that is potentially going to become flagship. And I don't feel like I would ever release another membership site. This is it. You know, this is the one I'm going to continually add to over time for years and years and years, I'm hoping, and continually build it. I mean, there might be other books and stuff, but I don't feel like I would ever come out with a, you know, these, I don't know, $97 courses that people come out with, you know, in addition to the membership site that they have and things like that. Like, everything's going to be in there. And so it's not pivoting in a way where I'm only going to be focusing on, you know, my own products. It's just I'm pivoting in a way where I'm exploring new options, not only options for generating an income like the book and the membership site, but new options and ways to help people out, like the book and the membership site.
Now, you mentioned that you're constantly looking for different things or exploring different opportunities or running different tests. What other, you've been at it quite a while, what other ideas have you come up with and maybe even tested that didn't cut muster and make it to the point that this did now?
Yeah, well, I mean, for a while, I was really excited about software development. I mean, that seems like a holy grail for a lot of people, you know, to be able to build something that people can use over and over again that they might either pay an X amount of dollars for at front or pay X amount of dollars every month to use. And I mean, I use a lot of different pieces of software, plugins for WordPress and also things like, you know, Evernote and other paid, you know, membership things that I pay a little bit of money every month to use because it's helpful. And so I was really big for a while. This was back in 2011 on, you know, I actually had two WordPress plugins created for the audience that I was going to sell. They were going to be premium WordPress plugins. I had gotten motivation from Michael Dunlop from Income Diary, who created a plugin that made, you know, over $1 million, I think. And I was like, you know what? There's a lot of solutions that I feel like there's a lot of problems out there in the blogging world or things that I feel like I could provide a solution for. So let's develop software for it. So I built these two WordPress plugins. I hired a developer team and I spent $4,000 on both combined, and they were terrible. And it was completely my fault because I had an idea in my head of what I wanted, and I didn't do a good job of validating that idea. And also even just hashing it out in a way where if I wrote it on paper and shared exact, you know, if I wrote it on paper and wireframed exactly what did what and what button went where and what it did and everything, you know, down to the T, I would have discovered that, you know, maybe it wasn't such a good idea. I was playing off of emotion instead of really what would serve my audience. So I didn't even release those plugins. One of them was completely finished and it wasn't the way I thought it would be because I didn't, you know, again, it was my fault, not the developer's fault. I didn't think it through all the way. And so they sort of had to guess along the way. I sort of gave them the idea of what I wanted it to do, but they were, you know, given a lot of holes that they needed to fill themselves, and they weren't the way I wanted things because I didn't even think about those things. So it became a really frustrating effort, and I just scrapped that. And the other one, I discovered halfway through that, you know, same thing. It just wasn't something that after the developer started asking me more questions about it, I just started to discover that it was just going to be this thing that was too complicated, and it was actually going to negatively affect, you know, people who install it as opposed to actually helping them just as because of how complicated it was going to be. So, those are just two examples of things that I tried out thinking it was going to help people, but it didn't. And luckily it didn't take too much of other people's time because I was creating those things behind the scenes, but it did take some money away and things like that.
Are you always getting these ideas to try and test them and validate them, or do you just wait and see if someone sends you an email that says, like you said, with the course that people are having problems keeping with it, do you just wait for those kind of problems to come to your email inbox?
Yeah, I mean, I'm in a unique position where I have a large audience who I give access to myself too, so I can see and hear exactly what the problems and issues are, so I can create something that can solve those issues, whether they're free things like blog posts and videos and podcasts or paid products like Breakthrough Blogging. And the same thing happened with Green Exam Academy, my very first business, which is still up and running today. You know, a lot of people were asking me to write that ebook that I wrote back in that I published back in October of 2008. And I was very fortunate enough to have an audience. So when you have an audience, you know, it's very easy to open up lines of communication where you can listen to them. And I'm constantly getting new ideas from them for things ranging from blog posts all the way to products. And, you know, a lot of those bigger ticket items, for those of you listening who are entrepreneurs, which is probably everybody, you know, you know just how the bright lights, you know, flash and you want to drop everything and do that. And I've learned that that's the worst thing you can do. I mean, not only do you have to sleep on it, but you have to realize what things you should be doing now first. Like, what are your priorities? And even though I'm given many great opportunities to do things, I've learned to say no, or at least say no, not right now. I think that's a great phrase to learn. No, not right now. So with a lot of those big new ideas that come by, I actually have a shoebox and I write down those ideas. I don't even have a folder like in my Evernote. It's a literal shoebox, and I write down these crazy ideas or these ideas that come in my head for something that might take longer than a blog post, podcast, or YouTube, series or whatever to create. I'm talking products, like physical products. Digital products, more pieces of software I haven't even learned from my first experience. But I put it in a shoebox for later. And when I'm at a point where I feel like what I'm doing right now is done and I have more time to do something, and if I have the energy to do it, I'll go into that shoebox. And it's really fun to just pull out all those pieces of paper and just be like, yeah, that's a cool idea, or nope, that's lame. And just see what I want to do now. I mean, that's the beauty of entrepreneurship. You can do what you want to do. I mean, you have control.
Well, going back to your product, where you said it helps people keep with it. I mean, after 5 years, it's 5 years plus or whatnot. How do you get through those times where where you probably get bored or you feel like no one's listening? How do you get through that hump?
Yeah, I mean, that's a great, great question. When you first start out, nobody's listening. and so you got to keep going. And there's something to be said for having sort of a passion behind what you do. Not necessarily, that's sort of cliche to say, like, oh, you got to have passion for whatever it is you're talking about, because when you get into those bored periods, your passion's what's going to get you through it. It's cliche, but it's true. And it may not necessarily be passion for the topic you're talking about, but it's passion for something. And the reason I say that is because, I have a successful website in the security guard training business. I am not passionate about the security guard training industry at all, but I am passionate about creating solutions for people. And the group of people that I am creating a solution for there just happens to be in the security guard training industry. So I curate a lot of information to help them figure things out and how to develop a career in protective services. So that's just an example, of why passion is important, but also, sort of motivation and realizing why you're doing what you're doing. I think a lot of people get bored because they think about what they're doing and not what are they doing things for. They forget what their goals are, and it's so easy to forget what your goals are. I mean, because we're so in the now. And so I like to put little things up in my office and that remind me of why I'm doing what I'm doing. And I'm very fortunate to be living at home with the most important things in the world to me, my kids, who remind me every day why I do what I do. And so, and beyond that, especially for those of you who don't have kids, I mean, I'm not saying you should pop out kids just to get motivated. Although there is something called the baby effect, which John Dumas talked about in my last podcast, number 77. He said, he's interviewed over 300 entrepreneurs on entrepreneuronfire.com. And he said it's very common that a lot of people are successful and attribute it a lot to having a baby in the family, which is interesting. Again, I'm not saying you should go out and have babies just for that reason. But I will say that being a father has been the best, absolute, most awesome thing in the world for me. But anyway, for those of you who aren't parents yet, or
start with a dog.
Yeah. Well, good one. Start with a dog, but also realize that you have an audience out there. Maybe they're a part of your audience already, or maybe they're going to be a part of your audience who are going to benefit from the content that you're going to share and the work that you're going to do now. They might not benefit from it at the moment that you're creating it. And again, like I said, your audience might not be there yet. But if you don't do the work, people aren't going to be able to benefit from it. And that is a huge motivator for me, especially when the times are rough, or especially when something just seems really hard. With creating breakthrough blogging, I knew that that was going to be helpful. People told me that that's what they needed. I did the research, but it was extremely hard to create. I mean, it was so, months were put into that, and the research and the creating the videos and the scripts and everything and the software and all that stuff. But what got me through it was knowing that if I didn't do it, people wouldn't benefit from it. And so that's something really, really important to think about.
Well, you brought up something that I want to talk about a little bit, because this is something that I've somewhat dabbled in, and that's your Niche Site Dual 1 project, which is securityguardtraininghq.com, and then you're now working on the Niche Site Dual 2 project, which is a food truck website. What lessons did you learn from that from the first one that you're now doing things differently to the second one? Because I know a lot of people listening are, playing right along with you.
Sure. And it's interesting because I have a post that is 99% finished that's an update for Ninja Site Duel 2.0. And in the end, it talks a little bit about the differences between Ninja Site Duel 1 and Ninja Site Duel 2. So this is fresh on my mind, definitely. You know, it's interesting. From a case study point of view, you know, specifically on Smart Passive Income, NSD 1.0 taught me how awesome it is to be completely transparent, to show every little step along the way. Because I had no idea when I was creating that experiment. Actually, I got challenged by a friend and we decided to just post everything online for fun. I had no idea it was going to have the effect it did, not only for driving traffic and gaining exposure for my site, but actually changing people's lives. I mean, there are people out there who have gone through that case study and have built businesses for themselves, who have quit their 9-to-5 jobs, who now are able to support their family, or maybe they just have a side income that allows them to take another vacation every year. I mean, that's so freaking amazing to know that just because I opened things up, people were able to do things that they weren't able to do or didn't understand how to do, because I just showed them how to do it along the way. And obviously the byproduct of doing that was the affiliate commissions from all the sales too. So not only was I able to help people along the way, but I was able to make a lot of money as a result too. And I calculated it sort of, and it's sort of a rough estimate, but I believe over $400,000 was made specifically from just making the decision to open things up and create that site. Now, I will say that there was proof there too, because when it got to number one in Google, you know, people could look that up in Google. You know, they could look up security guard training and find my site there. And obviously I wasn't making stuff up. And I remember the day I got to number one in Google, I announced it on the site, and it was 73 days after I started, which is really fast. And I'll talk about that in a second. My affiliate sales for domain and hosting, which is like the first step you need to do when you're building a website of your own, went through the roof, like 400% that month compared to what it was before I had reached number one. So again, just the amazing power of proof and actually doing things and showing things and being transparent, especially if you can succeed. Now, if I didn't succeed, I still think it would have been a helpful experiment, and it would have just been one of those things that I tried, like the WordPress plugins that people could learn from. And a lot of people have learned from my WordPress plugin experience when developing software and apps. And if I had failed with the security guard stuff, people would have learned from that too. Well, the difference between NSD 1.0 and NSD 2.0 is about 3 years. And within those 3 years, a lot of different things have happened with Google and other ways of generating an income online. You know, Google has changed their algorithm. A lot of the things I did in NSD 1.0, they still work, like the backlinking and stuff, but they don't work nearly as well. And I'm not confident enough, I can just say that, in those old sort of the old 1.0 ways. So that's why I'm sort of taking a completely different approach with NSD 2.0, where I'm treating it like a real business. And I think, you know, I feel like that's the way you have to go now if you want to stand out, where you don't even have to rely on Google anymore. I mean, smartpassiveincome.com doesn't have to rely on Google. Google could completely wipe Smart Passive Income and all of its posts out from its index, and it would still succeed. I mean, yes, it would suck if that happened, but I would still be able to get loads of traffic just because of the kind of site it is. It's a bigger site than just a little, you know, five-page site that just talks about one little thing, which is why when I discovered the keyword that I was going to target, you know, using the keyword research tool, that keyword was food trucks for sale. And I looked at that, and it had great numbers from a competition and SEO and search volume standpoint. But to me, I felt, you know, and after doing a little bit more research, I found that there wasn't any, you know, not only that there wasn't any good resources out there helping people sell and buy food trucks, but there wasn't any good resource out there helping people who were going to buy food trucks in general. And I just saw a huge opportunity there to create something much larger. And that scares a lot of people, because they see the sort of approach I'm taking with like a pre-launch page and building buzz for the site before I even start with the main page, and, you know, writing, you know, doing this huge launch plan, creating an Excel file of 200 contacts in the industry, stuff that I would have never thought of doing before just because I thought it would be a waste of time, or to, you know, I didn't need to do that. That stuff is the kind of stuff you absolutely need to do now if you want to become the ultimate resource for a specific set or group of people. And that scares a lot of people. And I think the sort of core message that I'm sharing with this example, as opposed to the other one, is you have to put in the work, And it's nothing is easy anymore. But if it's not impossible, which is why I share every step along the way and show people that, you know, this stuff is possible. You could do it. It just takes some work. And so, you know, if people were to ask me, you know, I get asked the question and a lot, you know, can anyone do this? It depends. That answer depends because, yes, if you put in the work, you can do it. But not everyone wants to put in the work. And that's my message.
Well, going back to you put up a test page and such. Have you tried putting up test pages for other stuff that maybe you haven't advertised that didn't work out?
The only thing that I've put a test up page for to sort of validate an idea before it went up and also build buzz for it was for a book that is half written right now that I have sort of put on pause or lower on the priority list. So I was working on a book called Be Everywhere. Actually, this is before Let Go was even started. And then my daughter was born, so I had to put it on pause. And when I was writing, I was really struggling with the subtitle of that book. So it would be Everywhere, colon, whatever the subtitle might be. And so I tested using Facebook ads by creating different landing pages on my Facebook page, different headlines. The specific ad would share a different subtitle. And so I could just see, based on the number of clicks and the conversion rates for each of the ads, which copy worked better. Everything else was the same except the title of the ad, which would be the subtitle that then the most popular one I would know would be the best one. Well, I got an answer. And the thing is, I just never finished the book. So I have a subtitle, but I don't have a book yet. And that's something I'm going to be working on in the future. But, you know, I was talking to, you know, Neil Patel over at quicksprout.com and he was talking about how, you know, what's really succeeding now and sort of where Google's headed and everything is are these really incredible ultimate resources, these sites that are really treating their stuff like a business, or like a startup. And so that's sort of the approach I'm taking. And I think what that does is, I mean, even people already, I don't even have the main page up yet. I actually just posted up the coming soon page. And I'm not yet revealing the URL because I don't want the numbers to be skewed from the SPI audience. But already people are like, this is going to be huge. This is going to be awesome. And it's just simply because I have a pre-launch coming soon page. I mean, it's so cool to know that just that one little step can sort of skew the authority of a brand, you know, and sort of start to build buzz. So, a lot of lessons learned, and I'm still learning. But I've never done anything like this before, and I think that's why I'm doing it.
Well, then are you saying then that you are pivoting somewhat since you're doing all this new stuff? Is that right?
Yeah, like I said, I'm always pivoting. I'm always trying new things and seeing what works and what doesn't. And this is just another example of, you know, trying to see if this works or doesn't.
Love it. Well, we appreciate you coming on. Where can we find out more about you and your story?
Are we done already?
Do you want to keep going? We can go forever.
No, I just I just looked at the time now. I can't believe it's already 40 minutes. It only feels like
I know, it's crazy.
We have been our one criticism that we got from our early episodes was that we went too long.
Oh, okay. Well, you can split this into two episodes.
Nice.
There you go.
Just kidding. Well, hopefully, you know, I've provided enough value where it doesn't seem like it was that long. I mean, it didn't seem like that long for me, so hopefully for those of you listening, it didn't seem like that long either.
Yeah, well, especially because we talk about, I guess, different things, because a lot of our audience probably know your story really well, so, and we're happy to send people to another podcast to hear your story, but we like to have different conversations. And
So Pat, give us, like, your favorite interview that you've done on someone else's podcast that you think tells your story best.
Huh. Well, I would definitely check out Jared Easley from StarOfTheDoubts.com. He has a really interesting interview with me. I think it was the first one, actually, that they did. They had me doing a Chewbacca impression.
How's it sound? You got to do it for us.
Oh, dude. No, it's bad. It sounds like Tim Allen from Home Improvement. Like, it's terrible. It's bad, but you know, it's a really entertaining podcast. So if you're going to listen to one, I mean, I've been featured on, you know, hundreds of other shows, but that's just the first one that came to my head.
That's funny. Well, since we're on kind of like podcasting, I'm interested because people say that you are out for the money, but you don't put in I'm sure you've been flooded with sponsorship requests, but you don't put them on there. So I think that kind of validates that you're not really in it for the money. Do you have anything to add on top of that?
You know, I don't share this very often. I've shared it with my mastermind group and my close friends, but I'll share it now. I'm not in it for the money. And, you know, I'm not saying that this move that I'm doing is a validation for that, but I've been offered from a few companies to add sponsorships onto my show for, you know, and I just passed the 4.5 million download mark. So just, it's a lot of downloads. And I was offered, I'm not going to mention the specific companies, but I was offered between $3,000 and $5,000 per episode.
Wow.
And, you know, doing a weekly podcast, that's $12,000 to $20,000. When I tell people this, they're like, "You're missing out on $20,000 a month." And I know I'm in a good position now. I know I make a good amount of money, and I don't need that money. And I know it's kind of crazy to think that I'm leaving that on the table. But the reason I don't put them in my show is because those specific companies were requesting 60 seconds of ad, or, you know, me talking about that product at the top of my show, which I will not have. Like, the top of my show is my realm, and I need that. I need that to sort of set the tone for the podcast and show people, you know, this is why you got to stick around and listen, right? I don't want to show people an ad right up front. And so I offered them a counter offer. Hey, I'll promote, you know, for 30 seconds at the end of the show, and I'll even do it for half the money. And they were like, no. And, you know, it just showed me that they didn't realize, you know, what's going on there. If people make it to the end of the show, which most of my audience does, they're going to be more inclined to follow through on something, you know?
They're the consumers. Those are the ones that are going to take action.
Yeah. So, I mean, that just partly showed me that those companies, you know, didn't really know what they're talking about, and I don't want them on my show anyway.
Have you tried reaching out to companies that you do like just to test the waters?
No, I haven't. Although on the food truck site that I'm building, there's a good potential to include sponsorships in a podcast if I were to create one. And it would make sense and be a win for everybody. You know, it's not only a resource for my audience, which, you know, these companies are a resource for my audience and Smart Passive Income too, who've requested sponsorship spots. But, you know, it is something I'm going to experiment with. But, you know, I've started the podcast on Smart Passive Income, keeping it totally free, sponsor free. And I personally, as a podcast consumer as well, dislike ads. And so I'm not going to go against my own likings. You know, it's my show, and I don't want people to have to deal with that.
Did you start increasing how many times you let out a podcast? There you go. There's the words I'm looking for. Did you increase that because you see podcasts is on the up, or you just enjoy podcasting more? What was the ideas behind that?
Well, I was doing a twice a month show for the longest time. And then I went to New Media Expo in early January. This is January 2013. And I had a number of people come up to me during the event, not only after I spoke, but just around. And, you know, I go to these events and I wear this bright red and white backpack that says, "Hello, my name is Pat." And I tell people before I go to these events, look for my backpack and come and say hi to me. And a lot of people came up to me. And they shook my hand. They're like, "Pat, it's great to meet you. I listen to your show. I love your podcast. Your podcast is awesome. I remember this episode." They never talked about the blog. They all talked about the podcast. And that's how I knew. And also, it was reinforced by the fact that there was a podcast award show there. So, yes, I understood that also podcasting was on the rise. And that award show was crazy. Leo Laporte hosted it, and it was incredible. I mean, it was a packed room. So yes, it's on the rise as well. But just the engagement that I have with my audience and the relationship I could build with them was shown to me right in front of my face when I was there. And that's when I knew I had to switch to a weekly podcast. And I've been doing pretty good with the weekly podcast, although there were a couple times my site went down and I wasn't able to keep up, but I'm aiming for weekly now. And so that's why I've increased the frequency.
Love it, love it. So is there anything else that you're working on at the moment? I know you're within the Breakthrough Blogging community at the moment. Is there anything else on the side that you're working on?
My buddy Chris Ducker from chrisducker.com. He and I did a 25-person, you know, sort of mega mastermind meetup. We actually, he's from the Philippines. He owns a couple businesses there, and he flew to San Diego. And we were going to hang out for a while, and we decided to put on this little event together, a one-day event called One Day Business Breakthrough. You can check it out at onedaybb.com. And, It was probably one of the most fulfilling things I've ever done. So 25 people came in. They paid. It was a premium event. They each paid $500 to get there. And it was incredible because once we shared this opportunity, it sold out in a day and a half. And there was a waiting list of over 40 people. So it's definitely in high demand, which was a good sign. And then we had this event. Each person had the opportunity to share their business for 15 or 20 minutes. And we just ripped it apart and put it back together. And not only Chris and I would do that, but everybody else in the room would collectively help these people get to the next level in their business and find some sort of breakthrough that they could take home and take action on. And it was, like I said, one of the most fulfilling things I've ever done. And so Chris and I talked and we're like, you know what? We got to make this a little bit more regular. So we're currently planning on putting on even more events whenever he comes to the U.S. He comes to the U.S. a lot to speak. He's going to be in Vegas for New Media Expo, which I'll be there as well in January of next year. And then we're going to go to San Diego and put on two events in a row, a business breakthrough event on January 8th and then again on January 10th, just because we loved it so much. And just the incredible feedback from people was just amazing. So that's another thing I'm working on.
And I got to tell you, he's going to be coming on the Showdown in a few weeks as well. So he's everywhere. I got to tell you though, Pat, your bromance with him it's a little disturbing. I'm not going to lie. We need to watch out for that.
No comment.
No, after listening to that, I said, Joe, you know, we're just getting started. You know, Pat and Chris have been around for a while. We need to start finding out who our bromance is going to be with whenever we're at that stage with them.
Yeah, or maybe you guys don't even know it yet, but it's with each other.
Ooh.
Oh, that's so cute.
I'll pass.
Hey, Pat, how come you don't do, like, I just look at your income reports. It doesn't look like you, like, make any money, really, from speaking. Why don't you do more of that?
Because I got two kids in the house and I got to be here to support my wife and help take care of them. I mean, I do speaking, and I am actually speaking, and I'm glad you brought this up because this is another thing I'm doing. Actually, my very next speaking gig is at a wedding this Saturday. I'm the best man for my buddy. So that's my first speaking gig. And I'm actually using a lot of the things I learned professionally doing speaking. I'm going to put them to the test here at this thing for a little 5-minute presentation I'm doing. Anyway, he's not going to listen to the show, so he won't care. No offense, he's just not in this space. But I am doing my very first keynote presentation, and it's actually an opening keynote for the Financial Blogger Conference in St. Louis in October of 2013. So coming up in a couple months, and I'm really, really happy about that. And that is one that I'm getting paid for. I'm getting paid for another one the month after that. You know, we're talking four figures here. Which is going to be in Arizona. And what's cool about that one is actually it's a presentation I've already done. And so, you know, they requested it, which is so cool. And apparently professional speakers, I didn't even know this because I've done maybe 10 presentations before and they were all different. Apparently professional speakers just have like three that they master and they just do them over and over again. And I was like, duh, like, oh man, like this is crazy.
It's like a comedian. That's what they do. They just memorize their script over and over again.
And they fine tune it along the way.
Are you gonna pull out any dance moves like at your wedding?
Well, at this wedding or at the keynote?
At the wedding.
Probably during the dancing part of the dancing portion of the night. You know, I do like to dance, but I won't embarrass everybody and dance during the speech.
Well, let me give you one word of advice about the wedding speech, because we had David Wood on, and he's going to be coming on in a few weeks as well from the Kick-Ass Life.
Yeah, love David.
Have you heard his wedding speech story?
No, I haven't.
He basically alienated himself from the whole groom's family. He was the MC. They asked him to do something different, and all we could get out of him was that he did it dressed as Tarzan in nothing but a loincloth. And basically they all distanced themselves from him, and he went about 5 years without ever talking to the groom. They left before the party even started once they saw him.
What? Are you serious?
Yeah, so leave the loincloth at home and keep it professional, and you'll be okay.
What about a Speedo? That was part of it, but maybe I shouldn't.
You know your community wants to see that, Pat. They've been waiting
Pat
for Flynn a shirtless
Speedo.
Chick.
No thanks. That's okay. Banana hammocks and whatnot.
There you go. Well, Pat, we appreciate you coming on. We had a great time, and we could probably talk for hours, but we'll have to bring you on at another time. But we're just so happy to have you on. We appreciate you taking the time for it.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. It's been an awesome time.
All right, thanks, Pat. All right,
peace.
Well, that wraps up another episode of the Entrepreneur Showdown. Thank you so much for joining us this week. Now, to find out more about this show and to see the show notes, check out entrepreneurshowdown.com. Leave us some feedback in the comment section and let us know what you think. And if you like what you've heard, do us a huge favor and head to the iTunes store and leave us a 5-star review. So with that, for my partner Joe Cassandra, I'm Dan Franks. We'll see you next week.